Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, if you are within the sound of my voice, then you are listening to I'm Just Saying. This is the voice of Carla G. I'll be your hostess today, and joining me as co-host is I'm Just Saying regular member, Dr. Tahuti. Hi, UB, sir.
What's up?
Aha! Ha-ha! So, listen, we've got a 45-minute show, and I think we definitely have a very important topic that I want to start off with. We're going to sort of revisit the three-part series that we did, Hoodlums, How to Stop Manufacturing Them, in light of the story out of Chicago with a young man losing his life to a gang of apparent hoodlums. I just thought we might go over this whole hoodlum thing again and see what we can do to help stamp this out. So if you are listening to the show live and you have comments at any point, if you have questions at any point, you just want to talk with us, please feel free to give us a call at 646-716-4732. We'll be happy to have you join us in the conversation. So, Dr. Tahuti, yes, you, really for anyone listening, if you haven't heard, there was at least one story out of Chicago this past week, for future references. We're talking the last week of September 2009 into the first week of October 2009. Out of Chicago, there's a story of a young man who he's described as an honor student, Darion. I don't recall his last name. I'll see if I can find that before we end the subject. And he lost his life in a brawl that broke out. I don't know if it was on the school grounds, around the school. Again, unfortunately, as a hostess of a talk show, I often am not prepared with all of the facts, but all we need to know for the sake of this conversation is that a young man lost his life in a fight. He was ganged up on. And this, I think, directly speaks to the series and hoodlums and how to stop manufacturing them. And our purpose was to highlight six urban survival laws, which I'll just briefly go over, but Dr. Tahuti, I think we're both in agreement that we should, this is beyond stopping the hoodlumism, or, you know, not starting it. We've already got the hoodlums. We need to figure out what to do from that point. But just for reference sake, I'll quickly list the laws for staying out of the hoodlum lifestyle. The first law is true survival means promoting your life, your freedom, and your future economic opportunity. The second law, it's not only what you know or who you know, it's who you know and who likes you. The third law is to just do not participate in disrespect and infinite drama. And, of course, the only way to stop doing that is to never start doing it. A second part of that third law is to stamp out anger, fear, and pain, which means what we're really saying is that we must learn to control our emotions. Law number four is we're suggesting to learn two new skills and one new habit every 30 days. So we call that the 2-1-30. That's mm-hmm. what we're calling that, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And we've been coming prepared with a few notes and skills and habits to suggest in past weeks. Anyway, the fifth law is that people, places, and things should never lead you to danger. And the sixth law is to don't let anyone mess with your money. That one we might, if you listen to our series, you can determine what we mean when we say that one. But I just wanted to quickly go over those and just highlight that so folks have an idea of where we're coming from. But Dr. Tahuti, what have you to say about this unfortunate incident in Chicago?
Well, yeah, the brother's name was Darion Albert.
Albert, okay, thank you.
Yeah, 16-year-old brother. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, initially we want to, you know, send our condolences to, you know, this young brother's family and, you know, try to, you know, understand how this type of event affects our community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was reading somewhere recently where they were, someone was speaking, and I believe it was about this particular incident. One of the pastors, I think, was saying that over the course of some years, three young men had been killed who were in the military from that community, and some, you know, close to 40 had been killed in street violence. So the question
yeah.
was, you know, where is the war, really?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it on, in those terms.
Right.
But, you know, the thing that I know we were going to, you know, try to focus on the six urban survival laws, and I think they're important, but there was something that you said early in our discussion of that series in which you were talking about how stress might affect a baby in the womb.
And oh, right.
And I actually looked that up. And, in fact, there have been studies done on that, and there is, in fact, a hormone, a stress hormone that is passed from the mother to the child that is based on stress.
Okay.
And so, you know, I don't know if you were aware of that when you made that particular comment, but, you know, in fact, you know, there's a stress that begins on our children before they even enter this world. And
yeah.
And the
is that cortisol? I mean, I know the stress hormone is cortisol. Is that the one you're speaking of? Or?
Right. Well, what happens apparently is that this stress hormone that's passed creates an over abundance of cortisol in
mm-hmm.
children. And
right.
That abundance of cortisol creates what is called a fight or flight condition.
Okay.
And, you know, fight or flight is, you know, in fact, that part of our brain that allowed human beings to survive. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's that thing when, you know, you're standing on the corner and you see a semi truck or a bus, you know, jump the curb and come at you, it moves you out of the way. And it cuts off that part of your brain that reasons, because you
okay.
know, you cannot stand there and say, well, you know, I've noticed that semi has jumped the curb.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how I should respond in this matter. You know, that isn't the response in that situation. And
right.
you'll find that most people who've been in that kind of experience, they cannot often even remember how they got out of the way of that vehicle. So all I know is I saw the truck, and next thing I knew, I was, you know, over here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're extremely, you know, their breathing is out of control. They're, you know, they're
right.
in a different state. And the same thing happens to our children. So you have a child who's in school, and the teacher says to that child, you know, Shaniqua, I need you to put your books away. What? Who are you talking to? Why you always got to say something to me? I hate you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is Shaniqua responding to there? Is that fight or is that flight? She perceives that as a fight, right? She's not accessing reason in that particular situation. She has seen that as an attack upon her.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you have to conversely look at that situation in such a way as, how do most schools respond to that kind of behavior? Right? Who do you think you're talking to? I know you're not talking to me. I'm the teacher. Take your ass to the principal.
Right.
And then it escalates from there. Chairs start flying.
Well, all right. So we've got the stress hormone that the mother has passed on to the child. So we're already saying that this is just one big cycle that's seemingly never going to end. Because I guess my next question is going to be, well, how do we get rid of this stress? How do we make sure that it's, you know, that the right amount is passed on?
Well,
how do we minimize this stress so that it's tricky. And I even said this when we were talking about it the first time. We now have teenagers who have excess amounts of this stress, this hormone, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So what our question is right now, and if we can answer it, if we can put some sort of an answer to it, if we're 16 years old and we respond to everything as if we need to fight, what can we do that we aren't responding to everything as if we need to fight? How can we see it as a teacher simply saying you need to put your books away, as opposed to a teacher, you know, coming at you with fists? You know, are we hallucinating this? I mean, what's going on?
Well, you know, it isn't a simple solution to this, obviously, but the first thing is to understand that, you know, we're dealing with some very basic psychological and neurological problems that we have as a people, and they need to be addressed, and they certainly are not being addressed by the systems that are in place to provide services to our children. You know, the solution for our children is prison. And so
saying the system has put in place a solution which is known as prison. You're not saying that is the solution.
No, exactly right.
Okay.
You know, what studies have shown is that there are three predictors to violence amongst anyone, but certainly
mm-hmm.
our children, and that is to either experience violence on a daily basis, in other words, having violence visited upon you, or to witness violence on a continuous
mm-hmm.
basis, which is which is another stressor, of course.
Right.
And the third, which is particular to our children and our people, is disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
And that is based on how we define respect. If you ask a white person what is respect, they might respond to you, respect is earned regard.
Okay.
If you ask a black person what is respect, overwhelmingly they will say your sense of self, your sense of worth.
Mm-hmm.
So you can understand how a disrespect, if respect is my very sense of not how I'm viewed, but who I am, what I am.
Right. Right.
And then an assault upon that is going to elicit a very particular type of response.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this really, all of this goes back, and it can be traced back to slavery. Because, you know, and that's why I say this is not a simple issue for which we will find a simple solution.
Right. I'm aware of that. That's what I say. If we can, I mean, just you know, what do you think would be a good way to start?
Well, one way to start is that we need to take back control of the education world. We need to take control, not to say that we ever had it, although perhaps at one period in time in history we did have control of the education of our children. We certainly do not now. And
mm-hmm.
we need to have control, and we need to make sure that the people to whom we entrust that understand these issues and address them. Because our people need to be taught, they need to be provided based on a very specific pedagogy, which none of these institutions that the government sets up is dealing with. And I think one of the things that studies have shown that is important in the development of black children is racial socialization. We need to be racially socialized. We need to be taught and trained in a way that prepares us specifically for the world in which we have to deal and exist. It's the reason why the graduation rate from historically black colleges is much higher than for black students who go to predominantly white schools.
Okay.
You know, it's prepared. I mean, children need to be taught that they're entering into a hostile world when they leave these institutions, and they need to be prepared for that. They need to know that they're not the descendants of slaves, but the descendants of captured free men, the descendants of that come from a history of civilizations which were the first in this world, the descendants of kings and queens. They need to know they have a god, their own god, that they can turn to in these situations, and a technology based on those spiritual systems that can assist them in dealing with this world. And, and we don't have that. We are set loose in this world, totally unprepared for what we have to deal with.
Well, now, you know what? I'm going to get really picky here. But before I do that, I just want to mention again that you are indeed listening to I'm Just Saying with Carla G and Dr. Tahuti. We are sort of kind of talking about, well, we definitely are talking about hoodlums and how to stop the manufacturing of hoodlums, but we're putting a slightly different spin on that series that we did a few weeks back. And we're trying to offer some insight or some ideas on how to get a hold of the hoodlums that are out there right now who've already been manufactured and see what we can do there. But now, on and so, folks, the call-in number is 646-716-4732. And by the way, I do have the chat room open for anyone who wants to offer some comments in the chat room. Now, on your last point there, you were saying that it would be great if we had our own institutions. But what about this theory? What about when, let's go back with our ancestors and let's start with slavery, where maybe we still had some pride. I shouldn't have said it like that. But how is it that we just stop listening to our parents? I mean, where do you think that happened? I mean, there's no facts here, or maybe there are. I'm not asking you to present factual information, but just where do you think it started happening where we're no longer listening to our parents and we don't know that there is a God and we don't know that I don't know, we should be better citizens? I mean, how do you figure that?
Well, you know, they had some tests that they did with dogs where they wanted to see how the dog would respond if presented with certain conditions. They were presented with a stress. So they would have like a light. They would turn the light on. If the dog went toward the light, they would shock the dog. And then they just, you know, after a while, they just went crazy with this test. You know, well, what if we don't turn the light on and shock the dog anyway? What if we, you know, don't, if the dog goes toward the light, we shock him, and if he doesn't go toward the light, we shock him. What does the dog do eventually if no matter what he does, he gets shocked? He lays down and gives up. He does nothing.
Okay.
And so, you know, in many ways, this test is an example of how we live in this society, that no matter what we do, you know, I'm the kid who doesn't listen to their parents, and the kid who does listen to their parents, like this young brother Albert, who was killed, who was an honor student, who apparently listened to his parents, he's dead.
Yeah.
So no matter what I do, what
well, that's
can be the
thing.
Result.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why should I do anything? Learn helplessness.
Right. Yeah.
So, and of course that's not an answer to your entire question, because your question was rather voluminous, even though it was short.
Right.
You know, of course we know historically the systems, the things that we would have had to help us to survive were systematically removed from us. So our
mm-hmm.
language was the first to be stripped from us. Very
mm-hmm.
close to that was our religion,
mm-hmm.
our culture. And then even when those things were stripped, or at least the outer expressions of them were stripped from us, we were still able to come together and create manifestations like Black Wall Street.
Right.
Where our
right.
people could thrive and
mm-hmm.
and did well, and even they were destroyed.
Right, right.
And so then we were left now with what we have now, which is, you know, without really the tools that equip us to come together and really be able to survive and deal with the assaults that are heaped upon us by the society, meaning poverty. And not being able or allowed to read for 246 years, I mean, these things have an effect.
Well, yeah.
You know, if one white child experiences a Columbine situation, which was a horrific situation, then all mm-hmm. of the top psychologists, everyone is on the scene to address this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they know that experience has an effect.
Right.
Well, where are the top psychologists to deal with even the death of our brother Albert, let alone the fact that we as a people were not allowed to read for 246 years? Nowhere.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, on that case in particular, I think I did hear that there might be some psychologists that will be in the school to help the other surviving students cope with this. You know, you deal with youth. You're a lot closer to the youth of today than I am, and I've said throughout the series that we did and a few other occasions, I've said that I don't have the tolerance, because I mean, despite what you're saying, I still, from my perspective, it seems that if I am constantly, if I'm surrounded by people, if I'm just brought up in an environment where there's constant death, there's the constant threat, there's the constant stress, I'm constantly thinking that, you know, the truck is coming around the corner and about to run me over and I need to fly away from it, I would think my logic and my lack of passion perhaps says to me that I would try even harder to not fall into that. So I have a hard time accepting your theory. You know, it's like, okay, all right, so you had all these problems. You know, you had all these problems. And as you just said, you know, certainly we built Wall Streets and we've done this and we've done that. Certainly achievement is we're certainly capable of achievement. Why do you suppose, we're all just offering our opinions, why do you suppose we think that it's cool to you know, beat up somebody and then walk around bragging about it? Oh, you know what, and just to throw in something else too, I also heard regarding this particular situation with Mr. Darian Albert, that, you know, people are not coming forward and offering any information on this. So we also were talking about snitching, and these kids are not, quote, snitching. Whoever might have information on this, not offering any to the police. You know, that's unfortunate. I mean, this is a case where how can you not speak up about this? I mean, I know the police are not our friends, but how can you not speak up about this and help the case of this young fella? You know, I don't understand the value system. I don't. So my ramble is to ask you, can you shed some light for me and maybe other listeners how youth arrive at their current value system?
Well, they arrive at that because that's
what you just said.
Right, that's what they are presented with from the time, you know, they're very young children.
Yeah.
And not to say that we are doing everything that we should be doing. We certainly are not.
Mm-hmm.
And the only ones who will do something about this will be us. The society at large will not address this issue. When I say where are the psychologists, I'm not asking anyone to provide them to us. We
mm-hmm.
we have trained psychologists among us. But
right.
We just have to have the organization and the will to do these things for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, parenting is a very serious issue amongst our people because it's very difficult to parent children when there's only one of you.
Right.
And then add to that poverty, add to that a legacy of education that is, you know, has education on a very low rung in terms of importance.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard. I'm a single parent myself. I can tell you it is difficult because what children need from a parent requires you to be psychologically healthy.
Yeah.
You cannot be damaged. You cannot be
right.
Beat down by the stressors of this society and still be able and in a position to provide to your child what they need. And
mm-hmm.
so in most cases they don't get it.
Yeah.
Which is why their esteem is not what it should be. And
mm-hmm.
that goes back to the question of racial socialization.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back to the question of racial socialization because if the parents themselves had an understanding of our history and who we are and the fact that there was a Black Wall Street, how many of us even know about Black Wall Street? Never heard. Is it taught to us in the schools? I certainly didn't learn it. I'm
right.
a college-educated man. I didn't learn about Black Wall Street in any institution that I went to in this society.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I had to teach myself that.
Right.
Or go somewhere amongst people who knew it, who could teach it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not running any of these institutions that I attended. And that's
but do you think... Yeah. Do you think that it is just possible that there are some who will never get it? They will. I mean, no matter how much teaching you do, you know, they're just bad seeds. There are good seeds, and there are bad seeds. Is that possible?
No, I don't. I don't subscribe to anything
okay.
that suggests that we are irredeemable. And clearly that is the image that has been created
well,
of us.
I don't mean we, the entire race. I just mean, you know, just people. You know, there are some people who are going to do good and going to get themselves out of that situation, whether you teach it to them or not, or whether you show them something or not, you know, you show them another way. And then there are just some who... won't do it.
Well, I mean, I know that's what you mean, but in the society at large, we are the people to be feared. We are
mm-hmm.
the people for whom protection is needed from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We are the ones who are violent.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly, you know, is a flip of the script if there ever was one, because anyone who understands, and most people do not, understand the history of this society knows that it is predicated on violence. That the violence that this society is based on, and the raw violence with which we were treated as a people, is what eventually turned a people who were not prone. If we were that prone to violence, we would have killed every white person that came to Africa to put their hands on them.
Yeah,
they'd have been dead.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly we were not a people with a proclivity to violence, But somehow a people who were not prone to violence have now become violent.
Yeah.
And now who hit who first?
Right. Right. You know, speaking of that, and I guess we can sort of dial down on this subject, because it, you know, there really aren't any answers right now. At least the two of us, as hard as we might try, you know, the honest answer is we're not going to be able to solve this just yet. But I just wanted to say watching a little bit of President Obama's speech at the UN the other day, I just got to looking at all of these, quote, leaders, and I think it just would be nice to see people leading other people. You know, if you're going to call yourself a leader, I would like you to be a leader. And for me, that simply means that these politicians of other countries as well, you know, let's lead. Stop focusing on the petty stuff. What seems petty to me, you know, who drawing the line in the sand and, you know, knocking this brick off my shoulder or the stick off my shoulder and who hit who first. I mean, that's not leading people, in my opinion. Leading people is having the courage and the cojones to say and to move beyond that and to not have to feel you or to not feel that you have to respond to every audible from somebody. You know what I mean?
I think so.
Okay. You don't. That's okay. Probably nobody else does either. anyway, all right, so we gave that a shot there, and let's move on to another topic. Let's talk about Michael Jackson's autopsy.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's the autopsy. And it was concluded that Mr. Jackson was a fairly healthy individual for a 50-year-old man. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear anything about serious drug-abused organs. Did you? You know,
no.
I can say I don't necessarily always hear everything, but did you hear anything?
I heard nothing.
Yeah. Wow. And I'm pretty sure that it wasn't there, because I know that we would have heard it, because the media was just waiting with bated breath.
Oh, yeah.
To say something disparaging, something more disparaging about Michael Jackson. So I just thought it was very intriguing that it turns out, wow, he's actually a fairly healthy guy for 50 years old. You know, they throw that in there, for 50 years old. but particularly I'm most impressed with the fact that, hey, nobody seemed to have found any drug abuse, this ongoing abuse that folks were talking about. And I think it's interesting. Well, it's not interesting. I mean, Joe Jackson, as much as people want to laugh at him, the man said, "You're not going to find any problems with my son."
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said. So
and,
wonder
and
what they
interestingly,
think.
We said on
yeah.
this show,
yeah.
some of us, or maybe it was all of us,
yeah.
that we thought Michael Jackson was killed.
Yes, we did say that.
I mean, we had different opinions as to how he was killed.
Yeah.
But I think universally we said that he was killed.
This is true. I know I added in the fact that I think that people die of a broken heart, but his heart was broken because of society and the media and, you know, all these folks attacking this poor man who simply wanted to make the world a brighter place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this man came out like a bullet with this gift, and anyway, I'm happy for him now in death that at least the autopsy was clean, obviously excluding the fact that of what this other doctor pumped into him, but in general. I'm relieved. I shouldn't say relieved, because I knew it anyway, so relieved is not the word I'm looking for. I'm just pleased that, you know, there's actual proof now.
He's been vindicated.
Vindicated, yeah, indeed. All right, and then we can just, as we pretty much come to the conclusion of the show, we still have a few minutes, but how about this David Losario Letterman story?
Is that his middle name?
Yes, I'm calling him David Losario Letterman. I don't know if you knew that was his middle name, but it is. First of all, no offense to Mr. Letterman, but he has even commented that he's not necessarily the most handsome man in the world. So for him to, you know, basically bag as many women as he evidently did, there's hope for the average-looking guy out there. I guess that's the message that they can take from this.
Hope for the ugly, huh?
No, hope. I am not going to say that. I'm not going to call the man ugly. I'm saying the average-looking guy, okay?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's true, though. The average guy doesn't have, he's not Letterman.
They don't have the cashola that Mr. Letterman has?
No, they certainly do not.
You know, I wish I could speak to some of these women that were sleeping with him, because it doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't make sense. And not from the perspective of how he looks or even how much money he has. I'm thinking, okay, you're all working for this guy, and you've got to know that, you know, Mary just slept with him, and Susie has got to know that Mary slept with him. And if Susie doesn't know that Mary slept with him, well, when Darcy sleeps with him after Mary and Susan have slept with him, then they all at this point now have to know that they've all slept with him. And then when Rhonda comes along and sleeps with him, it's like, how does this keep going and going and going? And, oh, what is it? I mean, does he have something so special that every woman really had to try this out? I don't get it. It's like if it wasn't such a closed environment, and the word used, I believe, was several. I don't think it was like, you know, one or two. It was several staff members,
mm-hmm.
which I guess technically can be three, you know, and no more. I think several is three. But if there was some women around town or across the country or in other countries and not just concentrated right there at work, I could see that. But when you're just concentrated there in the work environment, I don't see how this happens. I don't see why the women were willing to do this. I just don't see it. And they unless they're just, you know, women who are ready, they don't care. And I'm not really trying to judge them, just saying that I guess I don't think any of them thought that they were going to get anything from him. And in fact, it wasn't any of the women, it was the guy.
I'm not saying you were a gold digger.
That's right. You know. But it wasn't any of the women weren't the ones who were trying to extort from him. It was a man who was trying to extort from him, which made me wonder. Now, wait a minute. I know, wait, where did this man come from? Was he one of the several staff members? Oh, no, I didn't just go there. Oh, no, I didn't just go there.
He was jealous. Homeboy was jealous.
Well, I mean, was he one of... Yeah, oh, right, he didn't get slept with, right? Is that what you're
saying? Dave, what about me, Dave? I can't get down. What's up?
What's up, Dave? Help me out. So I think that...
Oh, you're not going to put me down, Dave? All right. I got something for you, man.
It's like, what's going on? I don't know. Anyway, Dr. Tahuti, I think we can go ahead and end this program here for the day. I'd like to cut out a little early, sooner than our scheduled 45 minutes. Folks, you have been listening to I'm Just Saying. I'm Carla G. You're listening. Dr. Tahuti was the co-host today. Before I log off, I also want to thank my friend, Sandstorm7, a.k.a. Joe, who co-hosted with me, what was it, last Thursday, this past Thursday, on the Thursday show, and we had a fun time chatting about some more current events. Pretty good energy there, so that was good. Joe, how you doing? Big shout-out to you. And I want to welcome all new listeners and new friends to the show. Next week, I'm not sure what we're going to talk about. And so that just means I'd love for you all to stop back by the homepage here, blogtalkradio.com/I'm Just Saying. That's I'm Just Saying, and see what we're going to talk about. I'm going to post that in a couple of days. In the meantime, you guys can listen to any podcast that suits your fancy. And Dr. Tahuti, I just would like to comment, too, that if any of your four-legged friends there in the family want to come on board and have a chat with us, because I heard your buddy back there howling. He wanted to talk, and you just were not letting him. Why can't you put the dog on the show? We can talk with him.
The dog is ridiculous. He's still talking.
Poor fellow.
I have to leave the room.
Well, he clearly has a lot to say.
Yeah, he's opinionated.
You know, and you were just denying this poor animal his right to come on and talk on the radio. You know, I don't say all people have to call. I say
anybody who
you.
Listens to the archives, they might hear him on any one of those shows. Yes, I denied him his spot.
You know, maybe that's
some heavy breathing.
You're right. Perhaps that's what he's saying. You know, if I could put you on the phone, I would. You have to talk to your master about that. I'm so sorry. Anyway, okay, enough nonsense there. I'm going to let you go, Dr. Tahuti, which means I'm hanging up on you right about now. Thanks again, and we'll talk with you presumably next week. And to all my listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. You all, take care.